Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. It's Friday and today is the day when our players return for preseason training. Not all of the players, of course. Some of them are still away on international duty, or they've just finished international duty, so they've had a little bit of a break. But all the rest of them, the guys who haven't been doing much this summer, they've been on their holidays in fancy resort locations, probably like Torremolinos and Magaluf and Ayia Napa, all these high-end places. Anyway, they will be back today, Friday, checking in for some screening and a bit of an assessment, like, how was your summer? Did you happen to put a nail through your foot and get an infection and now your foot has got gangrene? Or, you know, how are your hamstrings and your groins and your calves and all those kind of things? That sort of a thing. So who will be back? We've got the goalkeepers, Bernd Leno, Emi Martinez, Nacho Monreal, who is still an Arsenal player. Of course, he has not been terminated, or his contract, rather, has not been terminated. Arsenal are yet to implement such ruthless measures when it comes to getting rid of players that they actually terminate them rather than their contracts. Maybe that's something we'll have to do a bit down the line. Who knows? Koscielny, Mustafi, Chambers, Jenkinson, Mavropanos, Maitland-Niles, Ozil, Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Takuma Asano, Gabriel Martinelli. A signing. We made our very first signing of the summer. The young Brazilian has signed from a club in Brazil that I can't really pronounce, so I'm not even going to try. But he has joined us. We all knew he was coming. We all knew it was a done deal. It's just over the line now. And we got pictures of him in his Arsenal shirt and also wearing a blazer and a shirt. He's a very well decked out young man. So obviously there's a bright future for him. If not in football, as a Marks and Spencer's model. So that's what's going on today, and those players will be back and having the japes from Monday onwards on the training ground. And then, of course, they're going off to the United States next week. In terms of transfers, that's about all that's really happened this week that's concrete. Of course, Crystal Palace were very unhappy with us because we made a £40 million bid for Wilfred Zaha. I personally don't think that's, you know, insulting in any way. Sure, they sold Wan-Bissaka for £50 million, but they also sold Wan-Bissaka to one of the biggest, richest clubs in the world for £50 million. And when you sort of compare Zaha to some of the other players around in terms of what he delivers, what he produces, I mean, I like him. He'd add an element of kind of chaos and fun to an Arsenal side that could do with some of that. But, like, the idea that he's worth £80 million is absurd. We just bought Aubameyang. We just bought Aubameyang, who's a 30-goal-a-season striker, just over 12 months ago. Well, maybe a little over 12 months ago at this point, for £55 million. So how does Zaha become worth £80 million? I think Crystal Palace are protesting a little bit too much here. They're trying to make out that we're somehow insulting them by offering what we think a player might be worth, or a bit less than we think he might be worth, in the age-old art of negotiation by, you know, not offering a monstrous amount of money straight away. You kind of work your way upwards. That's the way it goes. Crystal Palace are at it themselves, offering £10 million for Norwich City's Max Ahrens, who's one of the most exciting right-backs in the Championship. Norwich apparently are furious. They're incensed. They feel it's a ham-fisted approach. Norwich then are going to make a bid for a League Two right back, £4 million, and that club is going to go mental. They're going to say, this is crazy. We're incensed. That was ham-fisted.
That club will then make a bid for a player in the conference for £750,000, and the conference side will say, this is ridiculous. Who do they think they are? Trying to swat us aside like some minnows. Then they'll go down to, I don't know, the Ryman League or the local, whatever the next. It's the circle of football life. That's how it goes. Are we going to sign Wilfried Zaha? I don't fucking know. Are we going to sign anyone else? Probably. But who and when? I don't fucking know. I just don't fucking know. And that's where we are with our transfer business. But don't worry, because
I do believe that we have a very good plan to cover those positions, to be much stronger next year, to deliver the success that we're all hoping for. We have a very good plan. We have a very good plan.
Don't worry, Mr. B. I have a cunning plan to solve the problem.
Yes, Baldick, let us not forget that you tried to solve the problem of your mother's low ceiling by cutting off her head.
So let's see how that plan develops, how it comes to fruition, how it blossoms and blooms before our very eyes over the next coming weeks, because I refuse to believe that the plan is to fool everyone by going into next season with the same squad as we had last season. That's the last thing they'd expect. No, we can't be doing that. I'm sure there will be more transfers. Just when, we don't know. But anyway, we're going to talk a bit later on. I'm going to talk a bit later on to some of our Arseblog members on Patreon and the Discord channel. We're going to take some questions, a bit of Q&A. I'm sure some stuff about transfers and what have you will come up. But let's get on with the show and welcome our first guest. It is a man who writes for Football London. He spent quite a bit of time with Freddie Ljungberg last season from a journalistic point of view. I was interested to hear what he made of him. So, Laith Yousaf from Football London, hello to you.
Hello, mate. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Listen, before we get into all the painful stuff about transfers and finances and what's going on and not going on at Arsenal this week, we can go down misery lane together along with the listeners. I want to talk about something that is perceived to be one of the kind of positive developments of this summer so far. And that's the promotion of Freddie Ljungberg to the first team coaching staff under Unai Emery. He's going to work with the first team players, going to be part of what they've called a transitional team, or to help players move from academy level to first team level. And I know last year, particularly when you were working for the Islington Gazette, you interviewed Freddie quite a bit after the under-23 games. What were your impressions of him as a coach, the way that he works and the way that he operates on the sideline? Because we all have our ideas of Freddie as, you know, a player and what kind of a player and character he was. But how do you view him as a coach, and what are your impressions of him there?
Yeah, absolutely. Good question, mate. I covered the under-23s a lot last season. The under-21s as well. Obviously, Football London still covers academy level as well. So we'll be doing some under-23s and potentially under-21 trophy games, as well as under-18s next season as well. So I covered it extensively. Got to know Freddie quite well from a journalist point of view. He's a really, really good guy. We all know him from being an Arsenal legend as a footballer, and there's no side to him. He's a really, really lovely guy. He's really genuine. He speaks really, really well about the game. He's really articulate. He's intelligent. He's got football intelligence, obviously. He's obviously a very handsome man as well, but that's a different story. He's just a really, really good guy. And throughout the season, sort of started off, I think I did West Ham away at the London Stadium last August. It was a torrential thunderstorm. The conditions were awful. That was one of the early games under Freddie. I think Arsenal won 3-2. It was a real backs against the wall performance. The young guns did really well that night. A couple of weeks later, Arsenal played Coventry in the Checker Trade Trophy, and we managed to grab a few words with him after that. But I think that was the first time I talked to him. Arsenal eased to a 3-0 victory over a Coventry side. You could argue it wasn't their first team, really, but there were seasoned, hardened professionals there, men who've played in the lower leagues for a long time. And it was a really good test for the youngsters. And we had a really good chat with Freddie afterwards. He was really generous with his time. He stood and answered every question we had on the touchline afterwards. And I was really struck by the fact that he absolutely cares about Arsenal Football Club. B, he cares about the youngsters as well. He wants them to progress. Obviously, we all know at that level, it's not so much about winning trophies, although they did finish second in the Premier League 2 last season. But it's all about the progression and development and the general well-being of his players as well. He wants them to have a career in professional football, even if they don't make it at Arsenal. But he has shepherded a lot of really, really talented players. he is obviously mirroring the tactics that Unai Emery is setting from the top, basically. He's tactically flexible as a manager, as a boss, Lundberg is. He can think on his feet. He can change tactics throughout games. But he, what struck me was, obviously looking at his player, he was a very sort of creative player, quite flamboyant in terms of footballers, because, a lot of them are quite banal and don't have much to sort of say off the pitch, really. And he's obviously had a bit of hinterland with the Calvin Klein stuff, and fair play to him as well. But he came across as a really serious, deep thinker about the game. It wasn't just, the Freddie Noble we know with the red hair who's popping up, scoring vital goals and winning trophies. He actually thought things through. He was always thinking a couple of steps ahead in terms of game management as well. But he was just a very, very impressive person. And as the season went, as the season continued, myself and a few others interviewed him quite a lot after under 23 games and said, Checker Trade games as well. I did every Checker Trade game last season. They're all away from home, obviously. If certain listeners don't know, it's an under 21 side, basically. Obviously, we've got the under 23 that compete in the Premier League too. We've got the under 18s that compete in the FA Youth Cup. But the under 23, under 21s are sort of a makeshift team that has been entered into the Checker Trade Trophy, which plays against lower league sides. And Arsenal played Coventry away, as I say. They won 3-0. Forest Green Rovers, they played in November. That was a win. That was a must-win situation. They won 3-1. Prior to that, 2 weeks previously to that, Arsenal had gone to Cheltenham Town. Cheltenham Town didn't have the best seasons in League Two, but they were a typical lower league club with seasoned professionals who will never give an inch. And Arsenal got a bit of a pounding that night at Wadham Road. I was there, and they lost 6-2. And Freddie, to be fair to him, came out afterwards and he said the players will learn from this. I'll learn from it as well. It wasn't like he was sort of putting the onus on the players or anything. Yeah. He said, I need to learn from this as well. And one of the things that struck me, just in terms of his tactics and his man management, was the fact that Saka, Bukayo Saka, we all know he's a real prospect. He's obviously played for the first team since then, but this was sort of the end of October. As I say, Arsenal got an absolute shellacking 6-2. And I was watching from the press box, and you could see that Saka was getting pushed off the ball at corners, the few corners that Arsenal did have that night. His movement, it was obviously excellent off the ball, but it just seemed that he was being bogged down by the Cheltenham back line. I talked to Freddie that night, and he said, players, I'm going to... I'm obviously going to share my experience of certain things with the players. He didn't actually say what. He's got no right to say. He's got every right not to say it at the time. But then a couple of weeks later, after the Forest Green game, when Arsenal won 3-1, and that qualified him to the next round, basically, he was very, very pleased. We had a really good chat after the game again. And Freddie basically was saying that he sort of had a quick... He just took Saka aside just one day in training, literally a day or so after that Cheltenham defeat, and just basically showed him where to run, showed him where to move in the box, just to get away from his marker. Saka's obviously got a he's got a massively good temperament. I've talked to loads of people at the club. He's well respected, he's well regarded. The lad wants to learn. He's got a great work ethic. He obviously took it on board. He didn't take it as a personal criticism at all, and it shouldn't have been, because Freddie was really trying to just to improve his game. Literally 6 weeks later, 17-year-old Saka makes his debut for in the Premier League for Arsenal in the 4-1 win against Fulham. Admittedly, it was only 5 minutes at the end for Alex Iwobi on New Year's Day, but the fact was he was getting marked out of the game by League Two defenders 6 weeks previously to that. Freddie Lundberg just gives him a little technical tweak, a little bit of technical advice, puts his arm around him, tells him, look, son, this is where you should run. This is what you should be doing when you're pulling off defenders, pulling off the back line. Saka took it on board, and 6 weeks later, he was a first team player. So that's the essence of Freddie Lundberg, basically. He's a real, real prospect. As I say, he's a lovely, lovely guy. And I think a lot of Arsenal fans are really excited about his progression and his promotion to number two.
I think the thing is that the players really seem to have responded to him. The young players really responded to him, didn't they, in terms of how they developed during the season and some of the results that they put in. And it seems fairly clear that this summer, money being what it is, and the way that we're doing our transfer business, the way that it is at this moment in time, anyway, as we're speaking, there hasn't been a great deal done in the market, that there is going to be a measure of promotion, I guess you would say, from the under 23 squad to the senior squad, particularly for, I guess, the Europa League and the League Cup. And Freddie will know a lot of these players and which of them are ready and which of them are sort of just about ready to take that step forward into the Arsenal first team. To me personally, you know, it feels a bit like we're going down this road because we don't really have too much choice, that there is a measure of, well, we have to in order to, you know, to fill out this squad for next season if we're not going to make the amount of signings that we'd all like us to make. So if we're looking at that as, you know, perhaps not always the best way of doing it, if you've got someone like Freddie there who has achieved things and got some of the potential out of these players, it could well help.
Yeah, absolutely. You make some really, really good points again there, mate. To go back to the original point, Freddie Ljungberg is held in massively high regard, not just by the powers that be at the club, but by his players, his men, the teenage talents that are under his care throughout the season. I covered the final game of the Premier League 2 season. It was actually at the Emirates. They always sort of give him a nod at the end of the season for their sort of hard work throughout the season by playing the game at the Emirates. I mean, literally, there was thousand fans there. A lot of them were local, which was good. There was a good atmosphere in a little crowd, basically, which was nice. But Freddie, after that, Arsenal blew Leicester City away. You know, scored three goals in the first 10 minutes, basically, and won the game quite easily to finish second. But it started raining. It was literally sort of mid-May. The weather wasn't particularly good. And we've seen over the years certain managers with a head under an umbrella or just sort of walk down, not Arsenal ones, but yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But Freddie, he was absolutely soaked. He didn't care one little iota about it, one jot. He went out and shook the hands. I watched him. He went out and shook the hands of every single first team player, everyone on the bench, all his staff, all his coaching staff, all his assistants. He went over to them. He got the players to go over to the fans who were on the other side, the ones that were there, and give him a little clap. There was a real camaraderie there. His hands around half of them. You know, they were joking and laughing. He was sort of going over to a few, looked like he was sort of dispensing a bit of technical advice, even after the last game of the season. But not content with that, he then sought out all the stewards who were around, the technical staff, the security guys. I sort of said, Freddie, you know, you want to quick chat? He goes, yeah, just give me 10 minutes. I'm just going to go and say hello to a few people. And he was talking to the families of players. He's a real people person. He's emotionally intelligent. He can empathise with people. And that's one of the reasons why he's held in such high regard. The transfer strategy, as we know, what it is basically, as we all know, there's a transfer war chest of around £45 million. That will be supplemented by player sales. You know, I think there's another £4 million from David Ospina. All the players who are left so far, I think it works out to a saving of £410,000 a week in terms of wages saved from Welbeck's departure and Cech's retirement and a few others as well. But
Ramsey,
there's not a massive war chest there, as you say, as you so rightly say. So Arsenal having to cut their cloth accordingly. And what they're doing, it's an unofficial policy, but it's certainly, and it's not something they'd ever admit in public, but what they're doing is hothousing young players such as Torreira, who's ready for the first team. So they signed him £26 million. They would happily sell him for double that this year if AC Milan actually had any money under Gazidis. And Arsenal would be happy with that. They're hothousing young players who are ready for the first team in a bid to boost transfer funds. And they'll do it all again. Obviously, Guendouzi's another eye to that. He's ready. He's been in the first team, as we all know. If Torreira went, Guendouzi would step up. They would then look for someone else, a bargain in the continent. It's a policy most lower league clubs do and most smaller clubs do. Arsenal have to do that. As I say, they'd never admit it publicly, but that was just one of my stories. But at the same time, they're actively promoting youth. They have to, because the squad isn't strong enough. But also, that's another way to save them millions, basically. I've done a few stories on the fact that, you know, I've listed a few players that he could actually save Arsenal millions in the transfer market. And that's exactly what they're doing. There will be progression for a lot of youngsters this season. Arsenal fans have always backed youngsters who have come through from the club until they've seen otherwise, basically.
Yeah.
And even then, there's always a soft spot for them. And they arguably, they're not as hard on players who come through as potentially big signings who haven't sort of cut the,
well,
the muscles.
Yeah, well, so I mean, tell that to Alex Iwobi, maybe. I mean, just to sort of cut across.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair point. Yeah,
just to cut across.
So, I think if it had been signing, I think he would have got a lot more.
Yeah,
sticky.
Yeah, true.
You make a really good point there, yeah.
True.
Yeah.
But just to cut across, yeah, I mean, if there were three players who, you know, based on what you saw for the under-23s last season, if there were three players from that under-23 group that you think Freddie Ljungberg, based on how he's used them and maybe things he said about them, who would be the three you would suggest are most ready to make the step up and most likely to get the opportunities?
There's a lot of really talented lads there. If you go back to the defence, you've got Danny Ballard. I know he's just gone on loan at Swindon. I had high hopes for him, and I think it's not necessarily a retrograde step in terms of him going to the county ground. If he goes for a season, which he has done, and picks up a lot of experience, he's still only 19. He's been included in the Northern Ireland full international squads before. I think he could be a potentially really good player. But if you're talking about three players who can step up for Arsenal this season, well, I interviewed one of them on Monday, Eddie Nketiah, who there is talk of him going alone, and he did tell me exclusively that he was going to sit down with Emery and have a chat along with Freddie as well, and the loans manager Ben Napper too, to see where his future lies. But if he does stay at the club, he's got a massive future. He again spoke so well about being an Arsenal player and his ambitions. He was steely and quietly confident. He wasn't shouting his mouth off. He wasn't making large claims or anything like that. He just wants to play first team football for Arsenal. He's an Arsenal. He actually told me without prompting or anything, he was an Arsenal fan. He's born and bred Arsenal. Playing for Arsenal is his biggest dream. It's his life to play for them. So there's a plane going overhead. He's ready to play, basically. He had a bit of a dip after not going to Augsburg at the end of January. And prior to that, I covered the game up at Blackpool FA Cup third round, first weekend of January, and he missed a couple of chances. And he was getting a bit of stick on social media for that. But I think fans who were there and fans who know the score realised that you've got to be in those places to be able to miss the chances. Eddie was still talking about it the other day when I talked to him. But he's taken it on board, and I think he's ready, really ready to explode. He was obviously in the 23 for Baku, didn't get on while a colleague Joe Willock did. But at the same time, I think Eddie's ready for a big season. Hopefully it will be at Arsenal, but as I say, he does need games. Another one is obviously Saka. Saka's 17. It's ridiculous to think he's 17. He's still eligible for the under-18s, I think. Or if he's not, he's certainly under-23s and under-21s. He has got first-team experience, as we say, that in that 4-1 victory against Fulham. And he's another who could do really well. I think he's better out wide rather than as a centre-forward. He's got great technique. He's quite an athletic lad as well. He's got a good temperament. I think he's got a huge future. I think he's a player who can benefit by staying at Arsenal for another year. Just literally learning his trade for the under-18s, under-23s, getting a few games here and there for the first team in the Europa League and potentially the Carling Cup, and maybe even a few sub-appearances in the Premier League if it works out and Emery thinks he's okay, basically. That's the thing with Emery. He's not afraid to bed youth. He's not afraid to play youth. So I think there will be chances. The third player I would say would be Javier Amiche. He's a really good player as well. I know there's a few issues around him in terms of his contract and stuff, but he's another player who...
He's in the last year of his contract, isn't he? Or, you know, Arsenal are at a point where it's either get him to sign a new deal or they might have to move him on, maybe?
He is a real prospect in terms of contract. Obviously, you know, he wants the best he can. His advisors want the best for him as well. So it's a case of watch your space. But that Forest Green game I was referring to earlier in terms of the checker trade, he really won that game. He was immense that night along with Saka. And they just played really well. And I think he's another who could potentially do well. There's others. I'll say two. I know his future's not at Arsenal at the moment, but he was another who impressed me last season. There's so many that did really well for Arsenal, and there's so many more that are coming through. Yeah. Everyone can say there's potential there. There's talented players. People always talk about that, but there's a real crop that's coming through, and the ones that were under Freddie last year are an exceptional crop of players, and I think we'll see a few of them in the first team at some stage next season.
Yeah, I think we'll have to. You know, it's interesting. You know, we look like a team that also needs defensive recruits, and they're probably the most difficult to put into the team. Osei Tutu, as you mentioned, has gone on loan for the season, and we do have an issue at right back. If Jenkinson leaves, Hector's not going to be fit until probably September, and I think you need to ease a player after that injury, you know, back into action quite slowly so you don't lose him again with any niggles. Ainsley Maitland-Niles perhaps not as comfortable at right back as we might have thought he'd be. Yeah. I think, you know, he's had his good games, but, you know, if you look at the Europa League final, and it's not to suggest that he's at fault for our defeat in the Europa League final by any means, but he didn't have a good night that night on a big stage. Perhaps the kind of performance that might have convinced people he was a future right back in the long term, I'm not sure he had that. So when we talk about, you know, all the talk of Kieran Tierney, or coming in at left back, and we know that Arsenal are interested there. We're, I think, still awaiting concrete links to a central defender who isn't 18 and we're going to loan back to his parent club for a year. Yeah. It's surprising that there isn't a bit more focus on what's going to happen in the right back position next season.
I think for Arsenal, it will be a case of make and mend until Bellerin hopefully comes back in September. Just a point on Bellerin, I absolutely love him. Good luck to him. He speaks so much about veganism and LGBT issues and saving the planet with environment stuff. He's absolutely fantastic. And I think, obviously, as we all know, he will be number one choice. And I think if Arsenal can nurse that slot through until September, unless there's an injury setback, they won't be signing anyone in terms of left back. In terms of right back, talking about defenders, obviously you mentioned there, Scott, Kieran Tierney. He can actually play right back. He's played right back for Celtic. I think he turned out for Scotland at right back under Gordon Strachan as well a couple of years ago. He's only 22. I think he's played 167 games already for Celtic. I think he's lifted 11 trophies. He's got four Scottish titles already. He is ready to come south of the border. And Arsenal made an initial bid of 15 million. That was not back immediately. They then went back with 18 million. They were preparing a 19 million bid, as far as I know. I think Celtic won 22. If Arsenal offer 22, they've got their man, basically. And he's a leader. He's a real leader. He can really bolster that defence. Obviously, at left back, because Nacho Monreal's 33, he's not getting any younger. Incidentally, there was a piece put out that he was leaving yesterday. That's absolute nonsense. I talked to the club yesterday, and the line was, they actually said he was rubbish. It's not. He's turning up for pre-season training on Friday. Obviously, Arsenal do need strength. Klasen played at left wing back and filled in. So did Xhaka as well at left back last season. And it wasn't satisfactory in terms of having someone like that do that, because you're obviously losing him in the field, and he wasn't the best in that position anyway, as much as he tried. So Arsenal have to pull out all the stops for Tierney. It could be that they could actually play Monreal on the left and Tierney on the right for the first two or three games of the season. I know it's Newcastle away, which is always a tough game, but they are in a bit of disarray having party company with Benitez. Burnley at home the weekend after. I know Sean Dyche always puts out a strong side, but you'd like to think potentially that could be 6 out of 6. Yeah. 6 points out of 6. Obviously, there's a really, really difficult trip to the Champions League winners the week after, and Spurs and the North London Derby. But if Arsenal can get through those four games, there's the international break after that. So you're looking potentially mid-September. Bellerin could be back by then, so it might be that they're not particularly looking for a right-back. And as you say, Maitland Niles could fill in as well, although you're right, he was absolutely disappointing in that final. But then so many were as well. Yes. No one's blaming him individually. It's you win as a team and you lose as a team, and that performance that night was desperately disappointing. Yeah. Pretty much summed up the last few weeks of the season, really. Yes. For me, Valencia semi-final apart, really. Yeah. There's certainly options, but it's interesting. I talked to Ray Parler this week. I've talked to David Seaman as well. We put a few pieces out in Football London. And Seaman, certainly, he was like, why are they going for Zaha? Why are they going for Zaha? They need to go for someone like Tierney. I've just pushed the piece this morning, just basically saying that. Parler as well, he was hailing Tierney too. I even talked to Jack Wilshere last week for an exclusive, and he was talking about Tierney too, although obviously he was pushing the merits of Ryan Fraser, former Bournemouth colleague, and he spoke really, really glowingly about him as well. So there's certain targets that Arsenal are looking to land, and I think obviously having signed Gabriel Martinelli this week, Edu and Francis Cajou really, really deserve a lot of credit for landing Martinelli. But is he a finished product? No, I don't think so. Arsenal need some finished products, and they certainly need him in defence. And Tierney's hopefully going to be the first of a few that are going to come in. Oh. But you're absolutely right, talking about referring to Saliba there. I don't understand that deal. You know, I say we've got Arsenal have got 45 million to spend, potentially a bit more. You can pay instalments and all the rest of it as well. But why would you spend 25, 30 million on a player who you're going to loan back? I really don't understand it. Yes, it's great if you've got 100, 200 million in your Man City or whoever, and you're sort of biding your time for the future, and he'll obviously progress at Saint Etienne and come back a better player, or come to Arsenal a better player in 12 months' time. But Arsenal can't afford to do that. Emery hasn't got that much time. He's still got the goodwill of majority of fans. And I for one, think he's absolutely the right man for the job. He needs time and he needs money, and he's certainly not had money at the moment. The January transfer window summed it up basically. You know, $4 million on the loan for Denis Suarez, and that was it. I was at the press conference when he basically admitted there was no money, and everyone just looked at me. Did he really say that? You know, so he needs time. Arsenal need to invest in some players, certainly defenders to start with, and we'll see where we are. And come, I think it's August the 10th, isn't it? When the transfer deadline closes. So or as Richard Keys says, slam shut, or doesn't slam shut because it's not a real window. But, that's a different story.
Well, yeah, exactly. We won't worry about what Richard Keys says. Look, the clock is ticking, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that that things happen. But for now, we'll leave it there. Laith, thanks very much indeed.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Thanks for having us on. All the best.
Thank you very much indeed to Laith. You can find him on Twitter at Laithy29, at Laithy29, and doing his Arsenal stuff on Football London. Now, as we have been recording this podcast, big, big, big transfer news has broken. One of the deals of the summer, nobody saw this one coming. David Ospina has joined Napoli on a permanent basis after spending a year there on loan for a fee believed to be around 3.5 or 4 million euros, which is basically what we paid for him when we signed him from, well, I think it was Nice, wasn't it, after the 2014 World Cup. Here we are, 14, 15, 5 years later, and he has moved on. I mean, he never really seemed like a bad guy. David Ospina, he didn't seem like a bad bloke. He just seemed a bit too, you know, small and necklace to be a goalkeeper with arms that didn't really stretch out very far, and standing behind the line and that kind of stuff was never ideal for a goalkeeper. But there you go. He's off to Napoli, where the fans are much more understanding and forgiving than they are in North London, for sure. My favourite David Ospina moment was when he tried to say the word share in a promo with Alexis Sanchez.
Like it?
Share it.
That bit at the end, by the way, was Alexis Sanchez bursting into uncontrollable laughter. It was a good beat, though. Listen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right then, let's do a few questions, a bit of Q&A from our Arseblog members on Patreon. They are also part of our Discord chat server. There are text chat rooms and there are also voice chat rooms in there so we can connect to people, hear what they have to say, and we can do some a little bit of Q&A, a little bit of chat and what have you. If you want to be an Arseblog member on Patreon, you can join for €5 a month and you get benefits like ad-free Arsecast and Arsecast Extra. We're redeveloping our apps this summer. One of the features of the apps is that you'll be able to log in with your Patreon credentials and you will have an ad-free app so you can read the news and the blog and everything without any ads as soon as our apps are updated. That is happening this summer. They're in beta testing right now. There's a free audiobook, lots of extra bonus content in there as well. So if you want to join, patreon.com/arseblog, $5 a month and you get access to everything straight away. And there's no long-term commitment. You can just join for a month if you like, but hopefully you'll stick around longer and support what we do here. Right, first up, Ollie. Hello, Ollie.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you? I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really good, really good. I just got home as it was starting and saw the message and thought I might as well come on.
Might as well give it a bash. All right, yeah. Well, you're the first up, so have you got a specific question or, yeah?
Yeah. So, well, firstly, like, you know, love the blog, love the podcast, been listening for years.
Thank you very much. I'll do my best.
The question is, if the season pans out how we all fear it will, and we don't do very well, and Emery gets the sack, what kind of manager would you like to see come in to Arsenal? Like a young kind of Arteta type manager or an older hand like Ancelotti? What do you think we'll need?
It's a really good question. I think what we're going to need is somebody who can get more out of limited resources than Unai Emery might not be able to get, right? So, I mean, we are getting ahead of ourselves a bit. He could do better next season. It's not impossible, you know? But I do feel like... It's so hard because, you know, someone like Ancelotti is going to want to come in and spend a lot of money. If you give it to someone like Arteta, who doesn't have a lot of money to spend, you're putting him at a disadvantage as well. So I'm sort of hopeful that whatever we do this summer puts us on the kind of track where we will be able to give a manager real backing when the right manager comes in, if that makes sense. But I don't quite know who it is. I have a funny feeling about Freddie Ljungberg. That they're sort of positioning him a little bit. I know that it wasn't entirely the club's decision to make that swap with Freddie and Steve Bold. But it might well be a case that we get someone like Freddie. You know, if Edu is our technical director, Patrick Vieira. Coming back.
So, like, the theory is get a manager, almost develop the manager at the same time we're trying to develop the players and get the most out of a limited budget.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think that's the reality of where we are. Our budget is going to be quite limited. I think, you know, we've got a couple of players earning huge money who they would like to move on, but because of the money that they're on, they're not going to be able to do that. You know, so if we're kind of hamstrung for another season with a couple of players that we don't really want, and it has an impact on the budget, on the wage budget, certainly. Although we have knocked about, what, 400 grand off the wage bill already.
Yeah, or one Ozil.
Yeah, well, one Ozil is like, what, three, four players going out, you know? Yeah. What about you? What would you like to see?
I agree. I mean, there are lots of... I think that in general, the Premier League has suffered for years with having lots of older managers who just spill out the same old crap and the same old ideas. But you're seeing now kind of a new wave of managers come through. Potentially, Arteta will go into a first-team job. Ljungberg, if he doesn't take over Arsenal, might. And Vieira's doing very well with Nice. So, you know, I think... Maybe just it's the hype of the Adidas advert, but I'm kind of ready for a return of an old player to kind of to kind of keep the same, but also bring something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever it is has got to have Wrighty as his second in command. That should be
or the marketing guy at least. Yeah, communications.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, he'd do a great job. It is mad that Adidas have sort of spoken to us far more than the owners of this football club have in all the time they've taken over. But you know, cynical marketing. We can all see it for what it is, but it doesn't. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. You know.
Yeah. So I say sitting here in my new Arsenal Adidas top, but
I bought one as well. I bought one. Dude, I did. I got a Pires 7 shirt. I got a name and number on it and everything. Classic. So there you go. I was suckered in by the whole lot of it. Ollie, thanks. I'm going to try and keep the calls moving on, but thank you for your support here, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Andrew?
Yes. Hi, who's this?
This is Vic.
Hey, Vic, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. How's your evening, or where are you?
I'm in New York, actually.
Okay. I'll be in New York in a couple of weeks, actually, so I'm looking forward to that. What's
on? Oh, nice.
Yeah, because we're doing the tour and then coming home via New York, so I get a couple of days to wind down, so that should be good. What's on your mind this evening?
Any ideas on how you'll think Lacazette and Aubameyang will sort of play next season? I mean, this last season they sort of played all the games because they were probably the only things that could win us a game.
Mm.
But any idea how they'll be used next season?
I guess it depends on who we bring in. You know, if we bring in players that make it easier to play a system with just one striker, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Unai Emery does. I think he's the kind of manager who would prefer to play with one striker rather than two. But you're right. You know, we had to play them because they were just the best thing about the team, particularly in the last 3 months of the season when we really needed players to step up. They did. I know they didn't do it in the final, and there were a couple of games where they didn't necessarily do it. But I think those were more, you know, it's a lot to expect two strikers to service and deliver for themselves on a frequent basis. But I'm really curious. I don't quite know what's going to happen. I have a feeling we're going to go to a system with a back four and a system with just one striker. So how that's going to play out over the course of the season, I don't quite know. I mean, if we bring in someone like Zaha, let's imagine that we can bring in Zaha.
And wow. Big leap.
Yeah, of course it is. But, you know, we can go where we want in our imaginations, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I think we'd play him from the left-hand side. And that means, I'm not sure Aubameyang, if you do play him wide, is particularly good from the right. He tends to do better on the left-hand side. Lacazette, I don't think, can play in wide positions. So my answer right now is I don't know, because I need to see what we do in the transfer market before I can really make that judgment. But my gut feeling is I think it'll be just a one-striker system next year.
Okay, so does that mean that one of them will actually be playing Europa League games? Like, sort of, or would they? Do you think they'll be rotated for the Premier League stuff?
That's another good question. Again, depends on what we have available to us for the Europa League. Like, if they keep Eddie Nketiah, for example, maybe they give him the Europa League games. Maybe it's too much of a demotion for one of the strikers to sort of just put him down in the Europa League team, which I hope is going to be full of kids next season. I'm not sure that would keep either of them happy. I mean, there's talk of some suggestion that Lacazette's about to sign a new deal. So who knows? Maybe Emery's going to go old school 4-4-2 next season. You know,
old school. Wow.
Old school.
Do we have the midfield for that?
No. Not yet, anyway. Not yet. We've got a very good plan, though, for transfers. So don't worry. It's all going to come together and it'll be great.
I mean, we'll see the pudding, won't we?
Yeah, we will. We will. All right, Vic, I'm going to move on and try and keep a couple more calls going. So thank you as ever.
Thank you for taking the call.
Okay. Cheers, man.
You too, mate.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello. Hi. Who's this?
It's Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hi. Good, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. What's going on?
Not too much. Just first time submitting a question, so
okay.
That's always very exciting.
Sure. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Canada.
Okay. How's your summer going so far?
Well, getting started, but I think typically we share weather with you guys a little bit.
Oh, God.
But, okay. Yeah, not great.
I'm sorry to hear that. So what's your question?
So, basically it's about the, the kit launch and with all the promotions that Adidas has been doing. And just the extent to which it's kind of leveraging the history of the club.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering your opinions on kind of how, because it seems like we're going to be able to leverage the history for a little while, and even maybe through getting Yunberg in as the first team manager and Edu in as the, as the technical director. But I'm wondering what you think that the impact of that's going to be in the future, or how long we're going to be able to leverage that, or then have to recycle through the last 10 years after that, which probably won't be so easy to.
That's true.
Wondering what your thoughts were on that and how they're going to manage.
I don't quite know. I mean, I think the thing about the Adidas thing is they manufactured our kit when we won the league in 89 and 91 and into the 90s. So they had a very, when the deal ended with Adidas, I think it was probably 95 or 96. So they could sort of go back to that era, you know, when Arsenal won a couple of leagues and we had players like Ian Wright and David Rocastle, Tony Adams. We won a European trophy. So it seemed like a really interesting and obvious place for them to go back to. And people connect with those players because they're A, players who've won things and been successful and are part of the club's history, the fabric of the club, if you like. I think that's what they said. But a lot of time has passed as well. So I think there's enough history for people to go back on. Maybe you would like kit launches not to be quite as, maybe a little more important. Centered around, well, yeah, important. Okay. I mean, it lifted us all out of our funk, but, you know, centered more about what we might do in the future as to what we're going to do or what we've done in the past. I can really understand why Adidas did it, and I think they did it really, really well. I thought it was just superbly put together, not least because everyone was just fed up with the Puma kits. You know, last season's away kit was just horrible, and people were ready for something new. But I think, you know, we will have, and there always will be moments and pieces of history that people can use for cynical marketing purposes in the future. Don't worry about that. I think the industry will find a way to take those moments that we've all enjoyed and turn them into something that will sell us a product. Isn't that what they do, basically?
Yeah, no, completely. And to some extent, I guess I don't mind them doing it if it results in kind of the uplift that we've seen in the last 2 weeks. I guess it was kind of as a reaction to the Swiss Ramble thread, yeah. And then the differentiation in being able to leverage your history versus maybe some other clubs. And then it's kind of like, well, you know, what do you think the window is on being able to leverage the history versus needing to create new history, that type of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Well, look, we will. I'm sure we will create history one way or the other.
yes, hopefully for the positive.
Hopefully for the positive, but who knows? It could be just crazy as well. So we'll see what happens. But look, continue to enjoy your summer, and thanks for being here, and thanks for your question.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for doing this.
No problem, man. Thanks. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. You're there.
Andrew, how are you? Sorry, microphone on mute.
That's okay. This is Mike, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Mike.
Where are you, Mike?
I'm in Cork, in Ireland.
Cork, enjoying the beautiful weather we're having.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? It's not bad. Lifts the mood as much as an Adidas kit launch. What can you say?
It sure does.
What's your question this evening?
I suppose my first question is: do you think that we're playing a kind of a double bluff, putting out the story now that we have loads of money, whereas to kind of keep the fans on side, whereas before we kind of were saying we've only got 40 million.
Are we doing a double bluff? I mean, I think that the figure that's come out is basically based on the accounts and the money that was available for transfers last summer and, you know, our Europa League earnings and everything else. I'm not sure that Arsenal ever officially said we've got £45 million. No club will say this is our transfer budget. You know, you don't show your hands when you go into a negotiation. It's sort of guesstimates, really, but it's fairly widely held that that's what we have, unless we push the boat out a bit or we take some money from the cash, or maybe we get a bit of extra promotion money. You know, Adidas are going to pay us whatever it is, £60 million a season. You know, take an advance on some of those earnings. I'm not sure if that's something we can do. So I don't know who's putting what out, but you know, generally, I don't think Arsenal have a huge amount of money this summer. It feels like we've probably got a bit more than that to play around with, given that we're bidding £40 million for Zaha. We're after Kieran Tierney. We're after this young French guy who's going to cost some money at least this season, even if we loan him back. So there's probably a bit more out there than people think, but quite how much, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you add those together, it's close to 100, but maybe that includes player sales as well. So
yeah, it could do. Well, they don't seem to have any of those on the cards at the moment. So we'll see. Was there another part to the question?
There was another question, but
go on.
I was going to ask it in the Arscast Extra when I kind of looked into it a bit more. But second captains, Ken interviewed the guy that wrote Football Hackers, and he mentioned that Sven Mislintat replaced another guy who went to a German team. But I suppose I'd never heard of a kind of a recruitment guy other than Dick Law. But
yeah.
I don't know, did you know who that was? But he mentioned his name, but I meant to go back and listen to it.
I did listen to that interview, but did Ken say that he replaced somebody at Arsenal?
The author did of Football Hackers. He said that Sven replaced another guy who moved to a German club afterwards. So I just wondered who that was, because I meant to go back and check his
name. Yeah, I'd have to go back and listen to that. I can't think off the top of my head who that is. But I'll go back. I'll go back and we'll see. Cool. If I can figure it out, we'll talk about it on the Arscast Extra on Monday.
Good stuff.
All right.
That's it for me.
Thanks, yeah. Mike. Take it easy.
Thanks, Andrew.
Cheers. Bye. Bye-bye. Hello.
Hi, Blocks.
Hey, how's it going? Who's this?
This is Jeremy.
Jeremy, how are you?
Not bad, thank you. Yourself?
Not too bad, thanks. How's your evening?
Quiet one. Quiet one.
So what's on your mind?
Question. Might bring down the tone. I'm not sure if it was that high anyway. However.
Yeah, okay.
I asked, I don't know, a few months ago, if this is going to be a lean next 5 to 10 year period, considering where we are now, you said that you don't think so at this moment in time. Where we are now, have your thoughts changed anything? Just from my point of view, this next 5 to 10 years might not be the best, as it were. I was just wondering your thoughts.
I'm not confident that this is going to be our best 5 or 10 years. That's for sure. I suppose at the heart of the worry is what Stan Kroenke wants from this football club. If he wants it to do things or if he just wants to own it. My fear is that he kind of just wants to own it and let it chug along, and it's not really going to depreciate in value. You know, if that happens, then I think we're very dependent on the people that he puts in place to run the club. If he puts smart people in place, then we have a chance. But I don't think the push or the drive is going to come from the owner. And that's where I would have some serious concerns. I mean, I think there are some clever people at the club. I really like Per Mertesacker, for example, and what he seems to really connect and to get it, you know? And maybe that's what it will take. But I mean, what's your major fear for the next 5 or 10 years?
Backwards, I'd suggest. I think obviously we can all see we're pretty lucky that everyone else in the top six wasn't exactly consistent. And you just look at the clubs below, and their ambition seemingly is higher in terms of their stature of their club than what ours is. And to be honest, I think so you look at Wolves' midfield area, and it's like comparable to Arsenal's, if not better.
Mm.
And I don't see too many lights at the end of the tunnel at the moment. So, it's just slipping down. That said, I wouldn't want to be, if someone, a shake from whatever came along. I don't like that Man City PSG model at all. I think it's cheating, basically. But I still would like a new owner, which would happily, you know, dip into their pocket, much like the Liverpool ones have done at the moment. And that is a self-sustaining model, but they were willing to sack off their best players at ridiculous prices.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder sometimes, you know, we look at Liverpool and we think this could be the way for Arsenal to do it. And you can see, you know, how that might be the case. You know, you sell a couple of good players, you reinvest, you slowly, it has taken Liverpool some time to make the progress they have under Jurgen Klopp. And they went through some dodgy managers as well, you know, it's taken them a while. I do wonder sometimes if sometimes we look at the end result and think it's part of a massive, cohesive, coherent, well thought out strategic plan. And sometimes shit just comes together a bit as well. Like, I do think Liverpool's owners have been much better for Liverpool than Stan Kroenke has been for Arsenal. They seem to care. They seem to really want to, you know, have a connection with the fans, which the Kroenkes have no interest in. You know, I think we can see that. And they've put good people in good positions and they've reaped the rewards of that and the benefits of that. But I do wonder as well, just sometimes if it all just kind of fell together and made a, you know, a delicious cake for Liverpool. So, you know, timing of things can work in your favor or not in your favor. You know, I think this summer will tell us a lot about the competence of the people that we have running the club.
Just finally, so I don't take up anyone else's time.
Okay.
On a brighter note, if you step back and look at it, I think in the last 6 years, we've been in 5 finals and won 3 and haven't not been in Europe for 25, 26 years.
Yeah.
So we're not that bad.
And we did only finish a point off top 4.
As you can see, my point of view.
Yeah. And we did only finish a point off the top 4 as well. I mean, it was an appalling way to finish the season, but, you know, it was close. Hello, you there? Hello? He's not there. The internet has disconnected us. Let's try one more final one. Hello.
Good evening, Andrew.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, finally. Sorry, my laptop was not working.
That's okay. I've been having some connection issues with the last caller as well. So you're the last one of the evening. What's going on? What's the question?
The question is, the last couple of podcasts have been fairly negative. Well, and your tone and Andrew Allen's tone, certainly, about the future.
Yeah.
I was wondering if, you know, the new kit launch with plenty of transfer movement coming in and out, or rumours of it, you think we've turned the corner a bit since, you know, the 1st of July?
Well, there's rumours, isn't there? But, I mean, I don't know if I feel confident yet. Kit launch was great, and everybody, I think, got in the mood. Did you get one?
Not yet. I need to check how the sizing is on that front.
You're waiting for someone else
to... Skin tight like the Puma, yeah.
No, I don't think they're quite as skin tight as the Pumas. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like a lot of people, I'm waiting to be convinced by the football people this summer, you know? Last summer when we had Sven and we had Ivan, not that I'm a fan of Ivan, and we had Raul, we had like this functioning recruitment system and all of our business was done by the first week of July. And here we are in the first week of July and we haven't got anything done apart from the young Brazilian kid, which was done months ago anyway. And it's hard not to look at the fact that, you know, Sven is gone and we've got a double-headed chief executive. Doing the thing, you know, I need to see some deals come in before I start feeling better, because I think we've been down the road of Arsenal's transfer business taking too long in the past, you know.
I agree, but I think with the Zaha transfer in particular, I think it's prudent for the club to slow play it. It's a classic Sunday tactic. I do think by the end of the transfer window, he'll be an Arsenal player.
Yeah.
I know for a fact he wants to leave Crystal Palace for Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obvious. His brother has said it, you know?
Yeah.
His brother said it. So, you know, that's fine, but we also have to get a left-back. We also have to get at least one central defender. We also need a central midfielder. And I know there's names out there that are being linked, but there doesn't appear to be anything close. And I wonder about our capability of multitasking. I'm not sure we're good multitaskers in the transfer market. We can get sidetracked and sidelined by one saga. And it feels a bit to me like Zaha could be a saga.
Yeah, I think it was definitely going to be a saga the way we're playing it and sort of lowballing early on.
Mm.
I know you're quite high on Tierney, but is he really good enough to play for Arsenal? How good would Kolasinac look in the SPL in comparison?
He's a different kind of player, though, isn't he? Tierney's a very, very aggressive, quick, modern fullback, whereas Kolasinac is kind of a big beast of a guy who's good at one thing, really, and that's bombing down and firing in low crosses. I think Tierney's a much more rounded player. He's a bit more like Bellerin on the other side. So he's just a more natural fullback. And I think if we're going to go back to a back four, we need a proper fullback. I don't think Kolasinac is good enough to play left back for a season. I don't think Monreal has got enough legs to play fullback for a season. So I'd be okay with Tierney. I think he's a very decent player. 22, he could easily make a step forward. You not sold?
Not a 25, 15 million is a no-brainer, but I don't know. I don't think he's proven against, you know, top-tier talent. He's beaten pub players who are playing right wing for, like, Hearts and Dundee United week in, week out. I don't know.
Mm. Well, you know, other players have come down from Scotland and done pretty well. You know, the Liverpool guy.
Van Dijk's all right, yeah.
Van Dijk did all right, didn't he? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he looked good in Scotland and he came down and looked good in the Premier League. So a player we could have signed from Celtic if we'd wanted to, but somehow we didn't.
We're taking over Southampton's job then. That's
yeah.
With Wanyama as well.
Oh my goodness! Well, you know,
you've managed to depress me now, Andy.
Yeah, we've got Mustafi instead, so don't worry about it. It's all good. All right, man.
He could do a job,
yeah. I could think of about 50 jobs Mustafi could do for me right now, but none of them are on the pitch. All right. Thanks for calling in, dude.
Cheers, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed to our callers who use the Arseblog Discord server to call in. Well, not call in, just join a voice chat room, and you get access to that, of course, if you are an Arseblog member on Patreon. We will have lots more to talk about on Monday, I'm sure, when myself and James record the Arsecast Extra. We won't be recording until Monday afternoon, though, for various reasons, but maybe by then we might have signed a player or two. Who knows? I think we all know, but you've got to live in some kind of hope in these weird, strange, dark times that we live in. Right, just to let you know that if you're going to be in LA around the Bayern Munich game, we're doing a live podcast, a live Arsecast, from the Underground Pub in Hermosa Beach on Sunday the 14th of July. James can't make it over because he's doing the Edinburgh Festival, and it's all a bit tight for him in terms of time and what have you, but I will be joined by Elliot Smith. You know him as Yankee Gunner, the co-host of the Arsenal Vision podcast. We will hopefully have another couple of guests lined up as well. We'll do the usual podcast stuff, a panel discussion. We'll take a break, we'll come back, we'll do some listener Q&A, there'll be some beers, it should be a good, fun afternoon. If you want more details, if you want to buy tickets to that, go to arsenalinla.com, that is arsenalinla.com, and there's plenty more information there. There's loads going on around the games, Arsenal America and all the various fan groups from LA, from Charlotte, from DC, etc, etc, and there'll be fans from all over America, I'm sure, coming down to the closest game to them to see the Arsenal. So looking forward to meeting a lot of people out there this summer. And if you are interested in the LA podcast, visit arsenalinla.com. Right, I'll leave it there for this week's show. Thank you as ever for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. Have yourselves a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday with James for an Arsecast Extra. Until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
I was sitting there watching the world turn to shit on the news when the guy walked into the office. I hope you're here to cheer me up, mister, I said. Sure, he said, but first I need your help. What kind of help, I said. You need me to follow a dame? Pick up some scratch? No, he said, I lost something. Try lost and found at the bus station, I said. I ain't no sniffer dog. You're a PI, he said. I need you to do the I and keep the P on the down low. All right, I said, what is it? Look, he said, I told everybody I had a plan. What kind of plan, I said. Don't matter what kind of plan it was, he said. I just can't find the plan anymore. Time is ticking and I need to implement the plan. If I don't have the plan cannot be implemented. I need you to find the plan. I'll give you a plan, I said. Williams, Fellaini, Bergovic, meet you. Get your money out, buddy.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.